Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
And we are joined once again by a good friend of the show, Deez. How you doing?
Oh, I'm great. And to everyone who was annoyed by me in the first episode I'm in, lucky for you, there are only four more. So, congratulations.
Let's see if we can be a little more on the rails, I think, for this episode.
You know what, man?
That's fair.
I'm doing the editing. We got like 3 or 4 weeks until these come out. That's fine. We got time.
All right, cool. Well, we are talking about minute 71 through 72, picking up mid-conversation where we left off. Thankfully, not mid-sentence.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had one of those in...
This was a nice little cut.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We haven't had one of those in a minute. But we are talking about minute 71 through 72 of Dune Part 2 from 2024. Let's get into it.
The
Denis Villeneuve version. Oh, yes, okay. not the 2024 David Lynch version.
Okay, sorry. I did all of my notes on the Lynch version.
Oh, so I figured
we may differ a little bit.
I thought you did your notes on Jodorowsky.
Well, if I could only get that script.
That's what I did. Now I feel dumb.
All right. Well,
no love for the miniseries, eh?
We're gonna do a whole thing for the miniseries. It's going to get plenty of love. You see, now that I've put that out there on the podcast on multiple occasions,
we have to do it.
Yeah, you're on the record. Yeah.
I didn't say when, but we are on the record saying that we will do something for it.
We'll do something for it, of course.
Well, and Messiah is not coming out until 26. So
maybe. Something like that.
I'm anticipating 27. I think it's going to get pushed back.
I would just like to point out that in the trailer for the new Spaceballs movie, they say that there were two Dune movies, and that is not going to be true when that movie comes out. It will be three Dunes, and my GIF was perfect. So I'm not taking any feedback on that. It was a good poll.
I think that it's going to be a 27 release. I don't think they're going to make October 26 or was it December 20s? I don't know. Some late month next year. I don't think they're going to make it.
I don't know. I just want it to be good. That's all I want.
Yeah, take your time.
Yeah. But for this minute, I'm going to read where we left off and just continue on. So we left with hope. We are Bene Gesserit. We don't hope. We plan. Paul is not our only prospect. The Baron's youngest nephew, Fade Rautha Harkonnen, will inherit Arrakis. He may be the answer. Fade Rautha? He's psychotic. That's irrelevant. The question is, can we control him? And I intend to find out.
And I gotta say real quick, good on Gaius Ellen-Moheim for being accepting of all mental states. I feel like that's a pretty pretty progressive thing in this universe. Yeah. So like, that's awesome. Good for her.
Yeah, I appreciate the tacit acknowledgement that he's essentially Joffrey Lannister with all of the cruelty, but none of the stupid.
Pretty much.
I mean. Yeah, he is all cruelty, no stupid. He is a very intelligent, high functioning psychopath. So this is going to be fun to get into, I think. And you know, we scheduled this guest appearance well before April Fool's, but I just want to take a moment to talk about your April Fool's joke that you did for your account, because I fucking loved it. It was so good.
I literally did not think of it until day of. And then I was like, oh, yeah, no, I got to do this. And it was so fun.
Taking over your Muad'Dib Atreides account being run by Fade Rautha.
Yep. Yeah. Fade BDE Harkonnen. Yeah. It's, I mean, it was so fun. That will definitely happen again. It was too fun to not to do. That will. He will make another appearance.
Yeah, no, it was a super fun time. So if you're not following already, go follow Deez.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great time on Blue Sky.
So Gaius Ellen-Moheim, she turns away. Like after she says all this stuff, she turns away from Irulan and she's literally left there speechless. So you can see it in her face. She's like, I don't know what to say here. Because she just said, I mean, she called this guy psychotic, which I don't think is a word that they toss around lightly. And Moheim was just like, yeah, I don't care, whatever.
Thank you. See, I picked up on that too. I'm like, they are not just throwing that term around like as hyperbole, because the Bene Gesserit don't bargain with hyperbole. Like, they are very aware of exactly what people are. And I also thought it was super interesting that, like, you would think the easy answer would be to, if you can control him, no. Like, so it feels like, you know, they are infinitely confident in their ability, which rightly so. I mean, they've basically orchestrated most of what's happened in the universe to this point since the onset of, or the nascence of the Sisterhood. But, like, also, like, if you guys are calling him that, like, you know. And they're,
how,
like,
fucked up is he actually?
Yes. And like, they're like, this is kind of our only option. If Paul is alive, then Fade is the alternative. Like, we, like, cause it's not like there's a backup plan to Fade really. And it doesn't sound like, you know, even he is that particularly, enthralling of a prospect, but they're like, this is it. Like, this is what we have to work with. So it's not just like, the question is, can we control him? The answer to that is, you had better hope so. Cause if you can't, like, it is only Muad'Dib.
Right. I just real quick want to pour one out for, Count Fenring.
Oh, I have that in my notes.
The prospect that never was.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I'm like, oh, don't get. He he delivers one of the coldest lines in this entire series, including the Brian books. And no love in the film version.
No. We'll get to that, because I have a few things to say about that later on.
Okay.
Me too.
But yeah, we'll get to that in later weeks. But before we leave this scene, I just want to point something out. So we have given a lot of love to the costume design and everything for this movie. However, whoever decided to give Irulan like 4-inch thick, what looked like foam flip flops.
Okay.
Nah. I'm going through, you know, doing my, you know, watch back and, you know, everything. And they just remind me of these giant, like, purple foam flip-flops that my cousin had when we were, like, 14. And they were just, like, super thick, like, dense-ass foam. And it just, it threw me out of it for a second, because they're so goofy. Like, Irulan's shoes are really goofy looking in all of this, so.
Well, now I have to go back and rewatch this minute, because I didn't pick up on that at all.
I want to hear more of your opinions on women's clothing, John.
No, that's it. It's okay. just the shoes. All right. I think everything else was actually really cool. Like, I really like Irulan's little headdress thing.
It's called a skull cap. That's probably not good.
It's probably not a skull cap. It's a super ornate yarmulke.
You may have given a lot of love to the costuming on this podcast before, but I have not. So allow me to step in and just say, it is unbelievable. Like, I mean, obviously I'm here. I adore pretty much everything about these bodies. I adore everything that is relevant to my point of something I don't adore later on. Not Austin Butler's body though. That's impeccable. The costuming in this movie, like, it is so good. And like, every time I see someone walk out, like, particularly the Bene Gesserit, who, like, it feels like all of them kind of have, there's just something, there's themes, but there's not imitation or not copies. It is so cool. So shout out to that team, from someone whose opinion you really don't care about, but I thought you guys did a great job.
No, I don't think we'll ever stop just ringing that bell. Yep. Everything looks so good.
Here. All of the craftspeople that put their everything into making these movies, just like, they don't get enough love and attention, even though I'm pretty sure this movie has won multiple Oscars for like costume design and everything, but like, fuck it. They still deserve more, you know, love and attention for the insane amount of work that they do.
Yep.
And speaking of crafts, it's time for finger painting.
Yay.
Because we hard cut directly to finger painting time with the thickest black goop that you've probably ever seen being rubbed all over a muscular man's body.
Yep. Well, Dune, famously children's movie.
Yeah. Yes. Very much so.
Two things on this. One, is this the same black goop that the Baron was taking his bath in earlier?
No, this is way thicker.
Okay, so this is, I think we can all agree this is like a paint.
Yeah.
This is just a paint.
Yeah.
Well, according to Art and Soul, it's a melted plastic.
Oh.
Okay, so that makes it sound a little bit more uncomfortable than a paint.
Oh, man.
That's the Harkonnens. That's the Harkonnens for you, I guess.
Yep. Oh, I have thoughts on that. I think in this minute, I'm talking about that, so...
Now, the second point is I just want to take a moment to speak personally.
Okay.
Now, John, you can see me. We're in the same room.
Yeah.
Deez, you can see me. We're on the video call. As a bald man.
I'm not painting you with black melted plastic.
No. Okay. I felt so seen in this stretch of minutes because... And we'll get to this, but the men are bald, the women are bald, everyone's bald, just down to the skin.
Yeah, but see, you let yours.
I have
like...
a little bit of stubble right now because I haven't shaved it down in a week.
Yeah,
back off. Well, all right, I'm just saying, there's a little bit of underrepresentation. I feel like in Hollywood about
bald people,
hella bald men.
I mean.
Yeah, we got our Jason Stathams. We got our Rocks. That's all fine and
good. What about Vin Diesel?
Mm. Yeah, but he's family.
You have no, that's true. That's true. No, that's a good point. That's a good point. So what I hear you saying is you're actually Team Harkonnen because they're holding up the World Foundation for all of our bald kings.
And I'm going to say this as half joke, half for real, only surface level.
Hashtag the Harkonnens did nothing.
I should say I don't want to exclude anybody. Our bald kings, our bald queens, our bald days. The Harkonnens are doing the heavy lifting for all of them in this film, and good on them.
That's very true. Now, the caveat to this is that someone who we will re-meet later in the week. Your boy Lanville's a baldy too. So.
Yeah, he is. Oh man, but yes, Fade is getting painted with black goop, black melted plastic, as he's getting ready for some full body paint to support. Insert your local sports team here.
Mm.
That's one that I wrote directly for my notes.
I would like to. I mean, we talked about the costume design here. I want to know where they got all of the Patrick Bateman raincoats.
They probably made them.
I loved them. I loved seeing those come back to screen.
I love that they have the cool, like, individually, like, fingered gloves with the, like, condom covers on the fingers and everything too.
Some poor PA having to go out and shop for this and the guy.
Well, and also Fade is wearing the most intricate of loincloths I think I've ever seen in a movie or TV show,
which I think was a shout out to the
100%.
Sting famously is in a loincloth and
his sinewy body.
Listen, this
sinewy body.
This might be true, it might not be true, but I just want to say the rumor is Sting was supposed to give us full frontal in that scene, and I want everyone to remember what the prudes in Hollywood stole from you.
Damn it.
God damn it.
Well, I guess I know what I'm dreaming about.
You're the one who threw sinewy out first. We knew what you were dreaming about later.
Yeah. It was thinly veiled at best.
There certainly will be a beef swelling.
Oh, my. Frank, can you hear us? So, look on your creation in despair.
So we get some dialogue from Fade here. Now, before I say what it is, I just want to say that this voice is the gravelly voice that only Austin Butler can really bring to a movie. But it sounds like he's trying to do a Stellan Skarsgård impression.
Yeah.
When he says, "Would you like some fresh meat, my darlings?"
Would you like some fresh meat, my darlings?
That's really good.
That was really good.
Guess what? I listened to it probably 10 times, just hitting the fucking back button on my keyboard.
It's 1:30 in the morning. You're up. one cigarette and one light bulb on, just practicing this line over and over and over again.
God, what I would go for a 1:30 a.m. cigarette.
Those days are beyond us.
Rip.
Behind us, I guess.
Damn.
Yeah.
I don't think he was fully out of Elvis.
Well, so he wasn't. That's the thing. No, he was like famously horribly still like in Elvis land.
Okay. Oh. I can hear it.
So Art and Soul talks about how he was like fresh off of filming Elvis when he came on to do all of this and everything. And like apparently it was an issue where they had to like keep on doing multiple takes. Because he kept going
back into this one.
Accidentally, yeah. So, Art and Soul doesn't mention that much, but like, there's a little bit of research done online as well about that. Because like, I had heard about it, and I was like, "Nah, there's no way." Like, but no, like, apparently he was like,
he kept calling the attendants Priscilla.
Oh my God! Speaking of the attendance,
that's it for today's episode. Don't go find D's on the internet. No.
I will say, speaking of the attendance, if I may be so bold as to take the pressure of wrangling upon myself for just a second, because I found something insanely off-putting about the androgynous figures in white painting him, and then you have that juxtaposed to his quote-unquote pets in black smiling back at them as he offers them, I'm assuming, human meat of whoever he kills in the arena. And coming off the heels of the minute that we just talked about where, like, Notorious GHM is saying, listen, he might be psychotic, we don't care. He's, like, he's the option we've got, so let's just figure out if we can preserve him. Like, that introduction to this scene with the way that the people in it are juxtaposed to each other, it's like I almost feel like the back half of the last minute was put in there specifically so that when we got introduced to Fade, we were doing it with the context of the people who would know if he was crazy definitely think he is, and boy are they right.
And we're gonna find out.
Well, that raises a really good point. And I don't think it's an angle to the Bene Gesserit that we've ever talked about, is they seem to be nature over nurture or nurture over nature. Because they know this person's psychotic. They still want his bloodline. So they think that they can mold it in something. I guess that's nurture over nature.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're nurture over nature, folks. Good. Yeah.
How neat is that?
That's pretty neat.
It's pretty neat.
You can tell Fade's psychotic because the way he is.
Look over there, a pair of knives. Those are pretty neat.
Yeah, no, like, this definitely is like the, you know, surprise. Fade actually is really fucking psychotic moment. So here we go. Yep. Yeah. And the harpies, as they're called, in Art and Soul, are just there to help with the super off-puttingness with their all solid black eyes and black teeth and everything, which I feel like the black teeth thing is more of a callback to what used to be done in, I believe it was ancient China, where maybe Japan, where they would just like dye their teeth black with like charcoal or whatever, or royalty would do that, or members of court would basically dye their teeth black as like a social status symbol thing.
I don't know that story, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's the thing.
All right.
Cool.
Did
human history's wild.
Yeah, we're super weird.
Did the one harpy who smiled real big for us.
Yeah.
Did y'all get the impression that the teeth were sharpened?
It was hard to tell with the lighting. It's a very dark scene.
Yeah. I was kind of like on the fence about whether they were or they weren't.
I don't think they were.
But you saw little daggers in there.
I think that was the light.
It would track if they were. Like, I would believe either one. You could tell me either way and I'd be like, yeah, totally. That makes sense. The blacked out is creepy, blacked out and sharpened. Also pretty creepy.
I mean, if he's offering them organs, like just various pieces of offal.
Yeah.
Right. But I also watched you eat a bacon, egg, or a fucking Wendy's junior bacon cheeseburger.
Yeah. But,
and you don't have all sharpened.
Yeah. But
I got a few of them.
That's delicious. This is talking about raw. I'm assuming he doesn't offer to cook it. He just offers the meat. So, you know, raw mm-hmm. person. Sure. Boy, that's next level. I don't think I want to try that, actually.
But then the next statement actually made me chuckle a little bit. And I think I got this right, because I remember I was, well, I don't think I should have said this on the show, but I was listening and doing my notes this week while I was in the house full of screaming children on my family vacation. So I tried my best to get all the words right.
Well, I have them.
So. Okay, I know. I know you have them. You always have them. But he said, "What would you like? I hear they're big today." Did I get that right, John?
I heard they're big, but
yes. I heard they're big. Okay, fine, whatever. So we get that, and yes, he's clearly talking about the people he's about to kill at this point. There's no ambiguity left in this. Now, the next character.
Are you talking about Malakili, the Rancor Keeper?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, that's great, because I think that's better than Leather Gimp, is what I called him in my notes. So, I think I said half gimp suit guy.
I just have Marcellus Wallace stand-in.
Yeah. Oh, good. We both went to the same movie.
Yeah, of course.
And I am going to Return of the Jedi. Well, that makes sense if you know you're a big Trek guy.
Well, yours is closer.
Right? Yeah, yours is more accurate.
Honestly, I'm like, I have thought this since the first time I saw him. I'm like, God, that guy looks like the sad dude after Luke kills that thing in Jabba's sand barge. I had to look up the name.
That's right.
Malakili, I had to Google because I didn't know what his name was. And I couldn't remember Rancor either. Yeah, Malakili, he has a name. And he was... very sad.
That's great. Everyone has a name. Every droid, every side character, every background actor in Star Wars.
Yep.
Well, I think for the sake of this podcast, we'll call him Mala as well, just because he's not named. So,
Fair. Uncredited role. Oh, poor little guy.
Even in the
credits. I didn't go check the credits, but like as far as the subtitles are concerned, it didn't.
It probably would have said like male attendant.
Or yeah. Right. Or yeah. Like I thought I called him. I think I called him the blacksmith. I assumed he was the guy that forged the knives. I guess that's a little presumptive, but
I think no. That's what I took as well.
Forged in the fires of
Mount Dune.
Mount Dune. Yeah.
Just nips out, head covered, two new knives for Fade's birthday. It's boy.
Sounds like me on a Friday night.
Yeah, I mean.
Oh my God, it is a Friday night.
Surprise, motherfucker.
Friday the 13th. Hi, everybody. We're pulling the curtain back here. We're recording this on Friday the 13th.
Oh my God, it is Friday the 13th. I didn't even realize that.
Honestly, that explains the audio issues we had earlier.
Okay, yeah. We'll blame it on that. So. This guy, that's going to be a hell of a time figuring out where to come back in on the conversation.
Just keep it all. Fuck it. Yeah.
This guy comes in and he's holding like a leather pillow with two blades on it.
He's very sweaty, by the way.
Oh, yeah. He only gets sweaty.
He's not
just like me for real.
He's not. Second, he is not getting any less anxious as the scene rolls on.
No. So like very nervously he goes, your new blades for this very special day, Knob Aaron Fade. And I just wanted to take a pause and talk about that that title.
Knob Aaron?
Knob Aaron.
Knob Aaron.
Yeah.
So as best I can tell, this is something that Frank Herbert made up.
Mm-hmm.
It's been used in some other like sci-fi or fantasy series. But the earliest recollection or the earliest documentation of it that I could find was Dune Part One, the book.
Yeah.
I guess it's just Dune.
Interesting.
Yeah. So this is something that this is an original Frankism.
Attaboy, Frank.
Yeah. Maybe it was influenced by some other languages, but I don't think it was directly pulled from other languages like so many other titles and words are in this book.
Like Padishah?
Yeah, that one.
Specifically, since I have the appendix opened up, it is a prefix meaning nominated or next in line. Thus, Knob Baron means heir apparent to a barony. Which also, at this point, I can't believe I don't remember this. Has the Baron like told Raban, figure it out or you're being replaced?
So we had the conversation
in so many words. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. We had the conversation of tighten your grip or feel mine around your neck, which was basically his like fucking figure it out moment.
Yep.
So
do you think Raban knows that the Baron is already calling Fade the Na Baron? Like, was Raban ever expecting to be the heir apparent?
I mean, I think
I'm going to counter that question with another question.
Yeah.
Saying, do you think Raban is smart enough to figure that out?
Well, I think that's a really interesting question, because in the books, like, I can't remember exactly the scene, but there's a couple times where it implies Raban is actually smarter than you think. He's not, I mean, he is not Fade, and he's not the Baron either. But he's not like completely dumb. And like, I'm wondering, like, does he know? Like, he's basically kind of already been replaced. Like,
well, here's my actual answer to that. I think he's always known that Fade was going to take the place of the Baron, but he expects him, like, he expects himself to always have Arrakis. Like, that's the difference, right? So yes, I'm going to get this castle and hundreds of acres out in the countryside, but I'm not going to have the throne.
Yeah.
Going to eat a lot of peaches.
Oh, man. You know, I eat my peaches from a can, and they were put there by a man in a factory downtown. And you know what? That's fine.
We have a lost, I don't know if we ever actually did it on the show. Maybe we didn't, but we had a Moving to the Seaches parody of that song.
It's somewhere in our archive.
I think it's somewhere.
Episodes.
Oh, man. Oh, the presidents of good. The southern polar regions of Arrakis. Oh, I love that band. Yeah. They're great. Oh, we should have put that one up on the... Yeah.
Well, we'll do it. We'll work on it together.
Hindsight's 2020. Yeah, we'll workshop that. We'll fix it in post. I will say, we've been talking about how much more popular Fade is with the Baron than Raban. And I think it's worth noting that in the books, this is made absolutely explicit and also like very upsetting. The Baron really likes Fade. And that has always been
really likes him.
Something that stood out as interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the books are not, they don't like shy around this. They explicitly say that, you know, the Baron and Fade are both homosexuals that like just dabble in heterosexuality.
Shout out to my gays.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
But it's like there's no like blurred lines there.
I think that actually is interesting. I mean, this is not for the episode. That's something though that I've thought about. Like, one of the things that I studied in grad school was 1960s French high theory. So a lot of time reading Foucault, and he talks a lot about how one of the archetypes for the evil of the monarchy was the idea of this incestuous monster. And so when you're looking at how Frank constructs the Baron specifically, Fade not as much, but like when you're looking at how he's positioning the Baron in relation to the Baron's sexuality, his proclivities, his preferences, his desire for violence, which is another trait that you would see in the monarchy. Like, it's very classically tied almost like intrinsically to that kind of theory of ultimately criminality and sociopathic behavior. So this is actually a question like that I've thought about, because I spent so much time dabbling in Foucault, and then when I'm reading Dune, I'm like, oh, hey, wait a minute, like, Frank, did you read Abnormal when you were writing this? Like,
I mean, I wouldn't put it past him. I mean,
no, I wouldn't either. It's the original stuff from Foucault on it, and obviously, like, Foucault comes with a lot of his own baggage. I find the theory fascinating. If I find the person a little more complicated. You know, it was a series of lectures that he gave at the Collège de France. And it is really, wow, that guy just mixed Collège, the French pronunciation of Collège, with the American pronunciation of France. So there you go. It's another hand
Collège
for you.
France.
Yeah. Ah, where'd you go? I went to the University of Perry Sarbon. Sarbony.
That sounds like me when I try to speak Spanish. I still have to hear that Southern accent.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's endearing.
Como se dice.
Anyway, I think, sorry, a bit of an aside there. Like I said, I don't know if I would include that in the episode, but that is something that I've thought about a lot, because I know Frank had some pretty conservative social positions outside of his books.
Sure.
And so when you see that kind of being played into, like, part of what makes the Baron such an uniquely unappealing character, it is interesting to consider it, like, through that lens. So anyway, I'll get off my my professor dais now.
I don't know. He had very, like, conservative opinions outside of the books, but then again, at the same time, like, he had Leto chastising someone for talking shit about someone who was gay while also being guarded by essentially lesbian warriors. So,
It's wild. I think the way sensibilities have evolved, while the actual words in the books stay static, I think is always a really interesting interplay to see. It's cool to see stuff that ages well. It's interesting to look at stuff that doesn't.
Yeah. All of that to say, this dude looks fucking terrified.
Yeah. Rightly so. Because as we have come to learn very quickly, Fade is fucking psychotic.
Yeah.
So. Yes.
Now, what we get, the first little inkling, because we don't see it in this minute, but the first little inkling is I'm getting ahead of myself, my bad.
Yeah,
sorry. Well, what we do see here is Fade fucking staring him down hardcore. He's got a perfect Kubrick stare going on as he is just, like, daggers into this guy who is not making eye contact with him.
He's eyes to the floor,
like, so. You in a supermarket, he is eyes to all the ground.
I didn't come to this podcast to catch some fucking strays. Holy shit. All right, I'm ending this episode. Fuck you. You can find us on Blue Sky at DoomMinute.com. You can email
DoomMinute. No, come on.
Anyways. So yeah, this minute ends with Fade staring this attendant down super hardcore, and he begins to reach for one of his knives.
Yep. God, another cliffhanger.
Yep.
Well, maybe we'll have some resolution tomorrow's episode. We'll see.
I think we will.
Tune in tomorrow.
D's, any more nuts?
you gotta keep that in. Holy
got him.
Shit. Fucking got yes. himself, dude.
Nailed it. I retire. I'm closing down the Blue Sky account. I've peaked. Time to go.
God damn it. Any more notes on this episode?
Nope, not for me. You nailed it. 10 out of 10.
Sure. Bro, I don't think I can just do our outro. Like, it's fucking over for you, dude. No, I'll do our outro. As always, you can find us online at DuneMinute.com, on Blue Sky, or you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com. I'm going to go fucking catch my breath after that one. But we will be back with another episode tomorrow featuring our lovely guest, Deez. And we will see you then.
Looking forward to it. See you tomorrow.
All right, see ya.
Bye.